I'm JJ Ramberg, and this is Local to Global, The Power of Small Business, a podcast series from GZero's Blue Circle Studio, produced in partnership with MasterCard. When you hear the phrase small business, something personal might come to mind. The corner store where you grabbed a snack after school as a kid, the handyman who's always around to help you in a pinch, or maybe it's your hometown newspaper still putting out print editions every week. These businesses play a role in our everyday lives, but their influence and importance extend far beyond the communities they're in. Small and medium-sized enterprises are the hidden engine powering the global economy. They make up 90% of all businesses globally, and they're responsible for nearly 50% of the global GDP. While it's big corporations who get all the headlines, it's small businesses that truly keep economies moving. Throughout this podcast series, we're going to dive into the world of small businesses and explain why they're positioned to play an even bigger role in the future of the global economy. We're also going to talk about the rising middle class around the world, a combined market of about 4 billion people, and what their spending power means for the growth of businesses from Taipei to Toronto and beyond. To get started today, we're joined by Shamina Singh, founder and president of the MasterCard Center for Inclusive Growth, and Homi Karas, senior fellow at the Brookings Institution and the co-founder and chief economist at World Data Lab. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, JJ. Good to be here.
Shamina, I want to start with you. The impact of small business is not small at all. They make up 90% of businesses globally. They represent 99% of businesses in the U.S. alone. So help set the stage for us. How do small businesses shape economies and provide opportunities?
We always say small businesses are the backbone of the economy. What we don't normally say is, what small businesses? And, you know, what does it mean to be the backbone of the economy? And I think that that's what this session is really about, is digging into why does everybody talk about small businesses? You just said it. They're the job creators. They're the job retainers. They're the capital makers. They're the innovation drivers. They're our local grocery stores and our local fintechs. And so I think it's very hard to imagine commerce. It's very hard to imagine trade. It's very hard to imagine, quite frankly, anything happening in the country and in the world without having small businesses at the core of the conversation.
Homi, what's your perspective? I mean, you have a global perspective as well, so tell us about that.
You know, I look mostly at developing economies, and I would say in developing economies in particular, small businesses, one can say they're at the heart of the economy, but actually they're the heart, lungs, brains, and everything else of the economy. Because in developing economies, you really have very few big businesses. So if you're talking about business employment, meaning outside of government, you really are talking about what the rest of the world calls small and medium-sized enterprises. That's where people get jobs. That's where people get their incomes. It's mostly in small stores, retail trade, small manufacturing, transport activities, that kind of thing. But that's really how people bring themselves up. And one of the things that I pay a lot of attention to is the emergence of the middle class in developing countries. And when you talk about the middle class in developing countries, what are you talking about? You're talking about people who are working in small businesses.
You recently co-authored a piece in the Harvard Business Review where you shared insights on this population segment in particular. So let's dig deeper into the data and trends you're seeing.
Well, one of the things we found is that the world today now has probably more than half of its population in the middle class or richer. That's absolutely extraordinary. It's the first time it's ever happened in history. And what we see is two quite different trends. On the one hand, in emerging market economies, you have a continued relatively rapid growth of the middle class. Probably something like 110 million people every year joining the middle class. In advanced economies, you see the middle class basically being squeezed, and some people call it being hollowed out. In an economy like the United States, half of that hollowing out of the middle class is actually people going from the middle class to becoming rich. They're really becoming very well off. And half of that hollowing out is people losing their middle class status and really becoming a part of the lower middle class or even vulnerable groups. So it's a bifurcation of the middle class. But that's so different in emerging economies where right now you have these large numbers of people, especially in Asia, who are starting to join the middle class and having very different lifestyles, life opportunities, and life expectations as a result of that.
What does that do to small business? I imagine as more people enter the middle class, there's more business formation. Tell me if I'm right or wrong here. But as there's bifurcation in places like the US, then perhaps there's less business formation or smaller small business formation?
Well, I think it's the opportunity across the board. So just to put a finer point or give some perspective on what Homi was talking about, there are 4 billion people in the world who qualify as middle class. So he said, for the first time, it's the majority. That's 4 billion people. And the other piece that I think is interesting is that, you know, when I think of middle class, because I grew up in Virginia, I think about 2-car garage and a house and a neighbor on a cul-de-sac. I think what Homi's referring to are, you know, people who are going from $4 or $5 a day to $14 or $15 a day. So this is not a middle class that you would think about, I guess, in the conventional sense of the word. These are people who are opening bank accounts with $5 and then, you know, moving right on up to potentially opening a MasterCard, you know, at $20 per day. Mm-hmm. So just to give you the scope and the scale of what we mean by the purchasing power of the middle class, it's a little bit different from what people might expect. Now, what that means for small business is that consumption patterns are going to change because of the burgeoning middle class, both as Homi describes in developed markets, but also in developing markets. And so MasterCard did some research this last year. And just to give a sense of what we're hearing specifically about women, which are making up the majority of small business owners opening businesses, but will also make up a sizable, you know, equitable amount of the new middle class, 78% of women in Eastern Europe, the Middle East, and Africa aspire to start their own business. Big entrepreneurial shift in mindset for women. 89% of female Gen Z would like to start their own business in the future. We have a category of small business owners at the Center for Inclusive Growth that we call strivers. These are small business owners who are maybe too large for a microfinance institution or too large. Maybe they've surpassed using their own personal credit cards for bootstrapping their business, but may not necessarily be large enough to qualify for a bank loan. So these are what we call the missing middle of small business owners. And 55% of women in the region have side hustles to earn more and gain financial independence. 35% of these strivers of women have been targeted by fraudsters, which is another huge issue we should talk about when it comes to small business owners. And then 18% of women compared with 11% of men say they don't know how to start a business. And so we have a massive opportunity here, I think, with the consumption patterns changing and the movement of the middle class. We have strivers who are smart, they're ambitious, their business first. And these are the people who are going to be filling the needs of the new consumption patterns coming right across Africa, Asia, through to Latin America.
Increasing business formation was also a theme at MasterCard's 2025 Global Inclusive Growth Summit held in Washington, D.C. this spring. And your colleague, Michelle Meyer, who's the chief economist at the MasterCard Economics Institute, had this to say.
Since the pandemic, we've seen pretty extraordinary business formation. There was a low cost of capital, there were fewer barriers of entry, and it was one of the things that made the U.S. economy so dynamic, and the business formation is really being led by e-commerce, by online. The share of new businesses that are being created are overwhelmingly those that have an e-commerce play. Clothing stores, for example, over 50% of new business formation in the U.S. last year was online. And if you look at what that was in 2019, clearly the trend has moved in the direction of more and more e-commerce. The digitalization of the economy has been really important. And it's giving consumers a lot more choices, and it's allowing them to be a lot more nimble.
Digital growth, as Michelle talks about, is one piece of this. And this data was about the U.S. in particular. But Shamina, we were addressing this a little bit before, but in particular, how do you see small businesses evolving to meet the needs of this global middle class?
Our job is to leverage the assets of MasterCard in service of people and planet. And one thing that MasterCard has a lot of is data. And so when we can do anything with data and analytics, it just helps bring more context to the conversation. Michelle does something routinely called the MasterCard Spending Report, where she goes into more detail. On her MasterCard Spending Pulse report from December 2024, it showed that online retail sales grew 6.7% year over year, whereas in-store sales increased only 2.9%. So consumers are increasingly preferring digital-first shopping. The things that are most top of mind, I think, and this is leftover from COVID, is obviously curbside pickup, delivery. These are the conveniences and the services that consumers expect more and more from their retail outlets. Cities that are digital first are also seeing enormous benefit. Tampa, as an example, 10.6%, and Phoenix, 10%, are leading small business growth with double-digit growth. They continue to see that value shoppers are using in-person and online shopping, so retailers really need to manage across both as well. The other piece of this, though, is having a digital presence. And this is something we see a lot of in also in developing economies, is that unless you have a digital presence, you are inaccessible to the market. We saw this acutely during COVID when many small businesses fell off because they did not have a digital presence. What our Strive small business owners tell us and teach us is that, look, learning this new tech can feel hard. It is hard. They may not understand the new tech. They may be fearful about it. Might be too many options. Like, you've got a whole laundry list of things you can do and buy. And, you know, it just gets really overwhelming to figure out in this environment, what is the tech that's right for me? And I think that it's really important to have programs like Strive, like Digital Doors that MasterCard puts out, that helps alleviate the mystery, that helps navigate, uses AI to point you in the right direction, that helps business owners save time and money in their quest for growth.
All right. You brought up AI, Shamina, so I'm going to go on that. And I want to ask you, Homi, when you're looking at emerging markets, talk to me about AI and technology and how that's changing the landscape.
Well, I think first I'll talk to you about technology, because as Shamina said, this is really all about digital. One of the biggest problems that small businesses have is they don't necessarily have access to finance. So many of them don't even have a bank account. You know, they're operating in a cash-based economy. And so I do think we have to recognize that there are some quite different worlds out here, but there are also some similarities. So one of the things in Michelle's work that just, you know, resonates is that these small businesses, they're new businesses. Small business offers the opportunity for people to get started with something. And what we see throughout the emerging world is that small businesses are being formed in part by people going to cities. I mean, she also talks about how it's in cities that there's this growth, because that's where the market is. That's where the new services are. That's where the innovation is happening. These people aren't going to cities because they've got a job offer from somewhere. They're going to cities because they see that as being their chance to really make an improvement in their life. They tend to be very young people. They're young people starting young businesses, and they're all digital businesses. And then you get out into the more experienced side of it, where, yes, of course, there are going to be many who are using AI. Sometimes they don't even know they're using AI, but they hook into these so-called digital platforms. Now in Asia, where you've got the most dynamic growth of the middle class anywhere in the world in terms of numbers of people, there are so many people who are using digital platforms. They can be farmers who are connecting directly with their customers on farm-to-market platforms. They don't know they're using AI. They're getting access to finance because of their payments to their suppliers. They don't know that their credit scores are actually being derived by some AI that's happening in the background. So many of these things that used to be happening in an analog framework are now happening digitally and with AI, and these small businesses are really benefiting. And they're benefiting in these two critical ways. One is in accessing finance, and the second is in accessing customers.
This gets back to Shamina's point, though, that you need to be trained. You need to have access to this technology and feel comfortable with the technology.
Absolutely. And digital training is absolutely fundamental, which is why, interestingly, it's the fact that now you have so many young people, the Gen Z generation, who are now driving this change and who, thankfully, are a little bit more technically savvy and technologically open than some of the older generation like myself.
The Kingdom of Bahrain is doing some interesting stuff here. That's a country that's really embracing the technology in its workforce. Here is His Excellency Salman Al Khalifa. He's the Minister of Finance and National Economy at the summit, talking about Temkin, its semi-autonomous government agency.
Temkin, under the directives of His Highness Sheikh Isa, recently announced that 50,000 Bahrainis will be trained in AI and will get free AI training courses. Again, putting Bahrain at the center of AI adoption. And that's one of the issues that when we look at, a lot of people talk about the risks of AI being X or Y or Z. We've really focused on one of the risks of AI being that it would be very concentrated in its economic empowerment. And it's our job, and MasterCard's Global Inclusive Initiative is very important, that we make sure that we work together to make it as diffuse as possible, take as many people as we can on the journey and the adoption of AI across different industries.
Shamina, that is amazing to me, that this country is making it such a priority. What's happening in the rest of the world so that all small businesses can have this leg up and all this training?
Well, I definitely think that what His Excellency shared at our summit was interesting. They are really putting an emphasis on AI and small business. But it's important because they're trying to position themselves for growth in a region of the world that has a lot of competition coming out of it right now. So really hats off to them for going there. I already mentioned that we've talked about digital being the focus, but I think the piece we really need to talk about is around cybersecurity, cyber threats and cyber attacks. That's really going to make certain that when small businesses are transitioning to this digital work, and frankly, JJ, going even from digital to data-driven, which I think that's what's really around the corner when we talk about AI, we really have to think about cybersecurity. We surveyed 5,000 small and medium-sized business owners across four continents. 46% of them have experienced a cyber attack, and nearly one in five that suffered an attack then filed for bankruptcy or closed their business. It is very tough for a small business to survive a cyber attack. Most of the time, if you're an entrepreneur, you're thinking about keeping your business open and your payroll and things like that. It's usually like cybersecurity is like number four or five on your list. You think, you know, if you buy some software package that you're protected. The truth is you're not. It has to be number one on your list. And we're seeing the data is telling us that if it's not number one, you go to zero in terms of surviving it. So really, we have to think about cybersecurity. A couple of things that we've done, again, really thinking about developing markets and on the smaller side of small business, creating toolkits, relatively inexpensive to create, but they're how-tos and what-to-dos when it comes to protecting your business. We have created these toolkits and we've also translated them. So as an example, we translated one of the toolkits into Bahasa, which is the language of Indonesia, because Indonesia has an enormous number of entrepreneurs that are transitioning to the digital economy and really need the cybersecurity toolkit work. We've supported organizations like the Cyber Peace Institute to help build capacity more generally across the nonprofit and the social sector. So really what we're trying to do here is build capacity in private sector and public sector and social sector, but also for small business owners around the threats that have chased us into the digital economy.
As technology gets better and faster and AI is more incorporated into running a business, do you see more opportunities for small business going forward or a little bit more of a winner-take-all situation in the future?
Oh, definitely more opportunities for small businesses. And it's quite simple. If we think right now about the degree of productivity of small businesses compared to larger businesses, we're talking about gaps of, I think on the average in emerging markets, a McKinsey study suggested that small businesses have productivity level of 29%, talking about three times their potential productivity gains. much of that is just from access to the kinds of tools that Shamina was talking about. And one of the things that these platforms that I was referring to do is they expand their ability to scale. So, you know, we talk about small businesses, but part of the idea of small businesses is that in many economies, in the most dynamic economies, small businesses of today become the large businesses of tomorrow. So scale is super important. They expand their access to finance. And historically, access to finance has always been one of the biggest problems facing small business. And in particular, access to finance at small scale. Because the problem with getting finance from the banking system is that the fixed costs of applying for a loan and getting the loan are just too high for the bank to be able to recoup those fixed costs through an interest on a relatively modest size loan. So they just simply say it's not worth doing it. These new technologies basically take care of all of that. And that is going to completely revolutionize and open up this world of small businesses. And, you know, as we've been saying, that's where all the people are.
Yeah, that is exciting. The access to finance that new technology is opening up opens up so many doors. Shamina, I want to address one other thing, which is that when you're running a small business, it is often a lonely job. And you feel like you are trying to solve every single problem, put out any fire, and you are in charge and you are alone. But I feel like a lot of the tools that you're putting out there is also creating a community where people can ask each other questions and they're not alone.
I think you put your finger right on it, JJ. I mean, if you're a small business owner and you're networking and buying from other small business owners, you're not alone. And so part of what we do as part of our Digital Doors work and our Strive network is connect small businesses to each other. So they are buying, selling, learning, borrowing, you know, growing together. The community piece of this is so, so important. Not simple, but relatively minor interventions can have outsized impact. Like, what if the Strive Network has been asking us for that we've delivered? Helping with pain points like inventory tracking and financial analysis and forecasting, using data to become more competitive, stronger online presence, digital marketing, like we talked about before, protecting against cyber attacks. And we're seeing the results. There's a woman named Dahlia Shah who I met who owns something called Sparkle Lighting. So when you talked about, is it winner take all or is it, you know, for everyone? Dahlia Shah is working on lighting. These are not people who are going to take the entire business away from anybody else. But she started expanding and got overwhelmed with the plethora of tech that's available to help her grow her business. And so we connected her with something called Digital Boost, which is an online and offline training platform that really works as almost micro mentors to small business owners. They started helping her both using AI, chat, and in-person conversation. They taught her specifically about digital marketing and search engine optimization and things like that. And since that engagement with the Digital Boost, her business has doubled year over year over year. She's expanded her employee base. And so this was not that she had to do some big overhaul and invest hundreds of thousands of dollars buying a place or, you know, rehauling an entire computer system. These were simple pieces of advice from an organization that's designed to help business owners like her make small, small interventions, small, small changes that had outsized impact on the business output.
Yeah, it's interesting. You don't need to recreate the wheel.
Right.
Chances are, if you have a question, somebody knows how to answer it. You just need to get to that person and get the answer from them. All right. I want to close with some closing thoughts from each of you. What is one thing you want everyone who is listening to better understand about the potential for global small business in the next few years? And Homi, I'll start with you.
I think the biggest thing I would say is just there is so much potential there. And that potential, it's digital potential. It's happening because of people moving to cities, but also to many farm communities. I mean, the ability to, you know, form cooperatives and to essentially participate in the modern economy. And it's small businesses that are going to provide the opportunities for women and for young people. And when we talk about how are people really going to get into the middle class and have a life of opportunity, what we're really talking about is, at one level, we're talking about inclusion. And we're talking about all of the people who never really had that chance. And the best way of getting into the middle class, for example, is by having a two-income family. So how are women going to really earn money? In most countries in the emerging world, they don't have formal employment job opportunities. Their way of earning money is going to be through small businesses. So the ability to have this potential to earn money and then how that then translates into improvements of the lives of literally millions of people and then their children is just extraordinary. So I think we're entering into a new age where many of the barriers that had really made small business into a really hard, hard slog, those are being slowly overcome, and instead it's becoming a great opportunity.
Well, listen, I'm the daughter of small business owners, so I got big muscles from carrying rugs that my parents were selling in a rug store. So I have a personal connection to the success of entrepreneurs, and I agree with Homi. I think that the technology and the digital and the AI are creating tools that could have helped my parents exponentially. Like, I just think about the stuff that they had to deal with and the tools that we're creating now. And I just can't believe how far it's come. But it only works if they have access to these tools. And so if you're a consumer, purchase from another small business in your neighborhood and work with organizations that support small businesses. If you're a private sector leader, join us in helping small businesses go digital. If you're a small business owner, look for resources. We know that when small business owners win, the world wins. So let's make this happen together.
And that is a perfect way to end this conversation. Thank you so much to Shamina Singh, founder and president of MasterGuard Center for Inclusive Growth, and Homi Karas, senior fellow at the Brookings Institution and World Data Lab.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
This has been an episode of Local to Global, The Power of Small Business, for GZero's Blue Circle. I'm JJ Rampert. We'll be back soon with an episode on the vital role small businesses play in driving sustainable practices. Thanks so much for listening, and have a great day.